Hi, I'm Steve, and, well, I brought a list.
And now, a guy with tons and tons of issues.
Yeah, I kind of do have issues.
And broadcasting them, searching for answers.
Yeah, to go, what the hell are we doing?
It's Steve Tannen.
So, at this moment, tomorrow and Friday, we will do our daily countdown. It is now 72 hours to kick off Miami and Florida. 4 o'clock Saturday, ESPN, our time. Canes, Gators, it's go time. There are some early FCS games, as George Schroeder and I were joshing about earlier. Colgate hosting Villanova. Probably be a better basketball game, but either way, we've got a top 10 team in action 72 hours from now. Welcome to Sports Talk 95.3 The Score, Wednesday edition. We had this conversation several weeks ago when I would assume it was media day and the Pac-12 commissioner, whose name I just spaced. Oh, Larry Scott.
Larry Snott.
I had about a 3 second, like, you know this one. Come on, you can do it. Ah, there it is. Thank you very much. Talked about scheduling 9 o'clock kickoffs, 10 Mountain. Well, John Wilner, legendary Bay Area writer, publishes the Wilner Hotline, about an hour and a half ago, said morning kickoffs could very well be a part of the conference future, just not this year. So, that was a very good pregnant pause by me, if I may add.
That was a great tease. You had me on the edge of my seat, man. I'm so relieved.
So the league's head of communications, Andrew Walker, said they're interested but couldn't find good options over the coming 3 months.
This is a bad idea.
So he said they want to monitor whichever Big 12 and Big 10 games are slotted in there, that 9 a.m. window, then reassess for next season. And by, in essence, delaying for 2019... Well, it says it'll allow the Pac-12 time for the schools and fans to plan for the unusual logistics, plus the pissing and moaning that is going to come flooding in like the Johnstown flood. They talked about the early kickoff, an opportunity for the host school as a branding opportunity, the centerpiece for a day-long campus celebration. And I know that we all view things from a different lens. And I've said, for selfish reasons, I hate the late kickoffs. But, if it's an away game and, say, Oregon is playing, or whatever, it wouldn't matter. Wherever I lived in the Western time zone or the Eastern time zone, if, a 7:30, 8 o'clock start, if I was just a fan who could sit and watch with their buddies and didn't have to worry about taking notes in a post game and actually being concerned with what's going on except for who's winning, and my main concern was, what kind of food do we have? Do we have enough beer? Are we high-fiving? Do we have a pool going? Do I have a bet on the game? It's a primetime sporting event. Been there, done that. But you guys kind of convinced me about how annoying those 9 o'clock starts might be. First of all, it never dawned on me, because we are, Nick and I, we work in this industry. The people we talk to are members of the media who are either writers or, fellow radio people or TV people or analysts. And we think about how we're going to have a take on this. It's like, well, maybe we should check with the players and coaches. And it's come up, and I thought Coach Cristobal was diplomatic. Some of the players were like, yeah, our day would have to start at 5 in the morning. And that's one of the things that got my attention, because you don't want to do anything. I mean, for openers, we know traditionally the West Coast teams that go cross country and play those early games or into the, doesn't have to be on a different coast. I mean, you know, Michigan is in the Eastern time zone, as is, I think, Ohio and East. I mean, I remember UCLA going into, I think it was Tennessee, although Oregon, when they visited Virginia and Tennessee, I mean, they came out on top. They also played bad versions of those programs, and they were really, really good. But as a rule, it doesn't behoove the West Coasters to play at a 9 o'clock start time, you know, to have your body acclimated. So if it'll impact performance, I just think you naturally have to be against it. Now, it looks like it's going to happen. And so let's look at it this way. If they had a game on campus per year in league, so if it happened once every 12 years, I could see, all right, we could live with that. But, yeah, our pregame would start at, what, 5 a.m. for a 9 o'clock start? I mean, the half-hour show leading up to our hour and a half, because Jerry and Georgie and Joey and Terry and those guys sign on 2 hours before.
That's the start of the pregame. That's not accounting for what time you have to wake up.
Right.
You're setting a 3:30, 3:45 in the morning alarm to get up to go do... Setting an alarm at 3 o'clock in the morning to do anything other than to get up to make sure that you get to the airport for a flight is ridiculous. And you better be going somewhere damn cool. 3:30 for golf? To what time are you teeing? Time are you teeing off?
No,
like before the sunset? Before sunrise?
It's almost as dumb as getting up for football.
Right. At least with golf, you're like doing something. You're probably going to see friends and hang out. And sure, you could afterwards make a full day of it until, you know, noon when, you know, all of a sudden you're like, I have to take a nap. But like to be able to push all of these kick times earlier in the day because you want to say, oh, I want to make sure that the student athletes have, you know, time when they get home in the evening after playing the super violent, physically draining game of football, that they have time to do homework on a Saturday night. That's just, it's ridiculous. Like, you know, put him on a plane and send him home at night, let him sleep a little bit, you know, take a nap on Sunday, work on the schoolwork, you know, Sunday afternoon or something. It's just, it's not worth it for all of the hassle that it's going to cause. It's not worth it.
I could say right now that initially I was willing. Now I'm like, please don't happen. Or, you know, and the problem is from an Oregon standpoint, like USC, probably Stanford, Washington, you know, when those schools are good, the nation pays attention, which means they would want to be featured. And it means, I guarantee you, one of those schools would be the guinea pig. I could absolutely guarantee that. So for now, let's just all do a collective, whew. Things got a little dodgy there. So, you know, actually, I realize I haven't seen the schedule, which games are already predetermined for kickoff times. As far as tip-offs, we got officially from Coach Graves and Dana Altman the non-conference schedule for basketball teams. And I made a boo-boo. The other day. Well, there's only been 2 days this week, so maybe it was yesterday. Talking about who the Duck women off the Final Four, they're going to go to Syracuse, and I thought they were playing Louisville here. I did not see the asterisk. That's going to be at the Paradise Jam in the U.S. Virgin Islands. It's going to be in late November, and I wonder when the Duck football team is playing the Civil War. The reason I ask that is, would that be a game that the usual beat writer would get to travel? So Civil War is on the 30th So I was thinking, I was looking out for our buddy, Ryan Thorburn. I was like, wow, the Oregon women are playing Oklahoma State and UT Arlington and Louisville in the Virgin Islands, but I would say they would probably have him cover the Civil War as opposed to early season basketball. But the Louisville game is there. And then February 3rd, in the midst of all the conference play, like you see sometimes, Oregon at UConn. And let me tell you something, that's going to be a primetime ESPN game. I guarantee it. As far as the guys, Houston comes to Matthew Knight Arena. Cougs made the Sweet 16, and they'll also face Michigan and Memphis. They're also going to have the Bad Boy Mowers battle for Atlantis. That sounds like a robot fight, not a basketball tournament. I'll tell you that much. Well, I'll tell you. They open up November 5th against Fresno State. And, of course, Memphis is going to be in the Phil Knight Invitational. And of course, they're now coached by Little Penny Hardaway, who has fielded the number one ranked recruiting class in the country. They got to play Hawaii. They'll play at Ann Arbor. Ooh, nice. It's Chrysler Center. And Michigan will be here next year. Interesting. And then, of course, I didn't realize the Hall, Seton Hall. All right. Good luck in prison. So the battle for Atlantis, the potential foes are Gonzaga, North Carolina, Iowa State, all NCAA tournament teams. You know, we've never got a true answer. It's been nothing but speculation. Man, if I live to be a billion, how Oregon and Gonzaga don't play every year, here, then there. I don't care if it's at Moda. I mean, you've got the two premier basketball programs in the region. I mean, Washington State's fallen off the map. Washington has really struggled. You know, of course, Coach Romar, his job, I think they're heading back in a right direction. And the Huskies and the Zags play all the time, but man, and you wonder who is or isn't calling the shots. Are the Ducks trying to play big boy and say, well, we'll come there, but you got to come here twice? Is it a matter of Gonzaga's like, oh, you want to play us now? No, you had your chance. I don't know. Everything is just pure out the rear end speculation. But man, for early season, be it on the Pac-12 network or one of the Fox affiliates or ESPN, especially with the, you know, obviously the borderline Hall of Fame jobs that both Few and Altman have done. I mean, that would get your attention in the midst of football season. Oh, by the way, the Ducks are playing the Bulldogs at the Puppy Pound or Matthew Knight Arena. It would have... You never heard that one before?
No, it's adorable. Who would be intimidated by that? Like the Dog Pound. Like with Cleveland, the dog pound. You got to see the W in there. The Puppy Pound? Come on. That's adorable. I want to go there all the time. Puppy Pound.
By the way, along the... starting times. My family lives in Big Ten country, and they told them they will not watch Pac-12 games noon their time because they're busy watching their teams. And he also said he's not waking up to listen to our preview show. Trust me, we're not going to be up for our preview show. We'll be going through the motions.
That's actually a really good point in that, you know, Big Ten, a little bit of the Big 12, occasionally the ACC, and then, you know, your bad SEC teams, they're all playing at that time. You'll get a halfway decent Big Ten game that's kicking off at 9 o'clock in the morning. You're like, this is worth watching. The odds of Larry Snott and his team of incompetent, you know, people down in in Palo or in the Bay Area, the odds of them picking a good game to have at, you know, 9 o'clock in the morning, the odds of that happening are very slim. Because if you're thinking there's a really good Pac-12 game that's going to be on and it's set for the national stage, it's going to have a really good TV slot because, you know, some way, somehow he's worked out a halfway decent deal with Fox and ESPN to make that happen. It could very well be the College Game Day game of the week. Like, that could be a thing. So you're just working your way down the list of like games that could possibly be on. You're taking a game off the Pac-12 network potentially just to have it put in. People don't have the Pac-12 network. It's all extremely complicated, and I really don't think Larry Snott has thought it through very much. I'm going to keep calling him Larry Snott as well.
And you know we're going to wind up getting told to stop that. So
maybe.
And by the way, just save the tape because I'm just going to totally sell you out. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon fuel injection hotline. So I was concerned about start times. Obviously, if you're a Duck fan right now, you got to be concerned about the receiving core, because after the news about Brendan Schooler, then the news about Micah Pittman, then all of a sudden the guys who walk the beat for the Ducks for, you know, whether it's Register Guard, I think I read it on Steve Mims' Twitter account. I think Rob tweeted it out. All of a sudden, Juwan Johnson wasn't at practice, and it turned out it was precautionary, and it was like, whoa, because that's kind of enough already. But the thing that I've been really, really concerned with was settled today. The XFL has revealed their names and their logos for the 8 teams. And there's a Wildcat. Isn't that the most popular college mascot as well?
Bulldog is up there, maybe a Tiger.
Tiger, I think that might be it. But Wildcat, obviously, you know, you got Nova, you got Arizona, it goes on. So there's the Dallas Renegades, who is already my least favorite team in the league, the Houston Roughnecks, the LA Wildcats, the New York Guardians, the St. Louis Battlehawks, the Seattle Dragons, stop it, just stop it, the Tampa Bay Vipers, Pugs, Thugs, Vipers, the Washington Defenders. This is what they've come up with after 2 years. So apparently they're going to play in a combination of three facilities, NFL, MLB, MLS, and they've sent draft pool invitations to prospective players, and their first signing, Landry Jones.
Wow.
So they start this coming year, right?
2020.
It's right after. So they're saying basically, we go through the bowl season, we kick it into the home stretch of the regular season, into the NFL playoffs and the Super Bowl. And as people are now getting into conference play in college and the NBA, they're again banking on, well, it's football, so folks will care. So I set the over-under at 5.5 weeks before it folds.
No, it's the exact same time frame and the time of year that the Alliance of American Football wanted to play, and they tried with. And
how'd that work out?
It went really well for one weekend where people were like, wow, there is still football to watch. This is kind of cool. And then everybody that's like, oh, I only love football, you know, October, you know, August through February, all of a sudden remembered, oh, that's right, March Madness is going on. I really enjoy that too, because there's not one person in America who's like, I only watch football. That's the only sport I watch. That's the only thing. If it's ever on TV, that's the only channel that I put on, is the NFL network and whatever, you know, red zone channel I can put on. There's no person like that. Like sports, I think sports fan will just move to the next best sport that everybody's kind of talking about.
That's my philosophy.
Right.
All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. And by the way, a lot of what I said is kind of tongue-in-cheek. I do understand that Vince McMahon has sunk a lot of money into this. I would guess they might survive the first year. But seriously, once, like you said, the template, I believe, has been made. The Alliance of American Fascist Football had people's interest for like a week or two. Then all of a sudden people realized, yeah, this I just watched the Super Bowl. I'm not, although the Super Bowl is pretty boring too. I really don't need this. And North Carolina's playing Duke this weekend, as well as, you know, the Warriors happen to be visiting Denver, and that's a more, you know, intriguing matchup. So if it lasts more than a year, I'd be stunned.
Well, it's an honor for me. You know, I think, you know, just to mention the same sentence as Sandy, I've always said that is a special thing. And what he was able to accomplish his career, and, you know, would have gone a lot longer if he was playing today, probably, because he could have gotten healthy. But just it's just a special thing, man.
Welcome back. That was one Clayton Kershaw. He passed Sanford Koufax as the winningest left-hander in the history of the Los Angeles Dodgers with 166 wins. A couple of times, I think one was on SportsCenter, they misled you to think he became the all-time winningest Dodger pitcher. No, lefties. Off the top of your heads out there as you're driving around, who would you say is the all-time winningest Dodger pitcher? As a matter of fact, he was an L.A. Dodger. The guy in second, I think, may have pitched a couple years in Brooklyn. And they're both Hall of Famers anyway. Yeah, Don Drysdale started his career in the mid-1950s for Brooklyn. He pitched 2 years, 56 and 57. And then they moved to L.A. He had 209 career wins. Don Sutton, curveball extraordinaire, has 233. A guy by the name of Dazzy Vance, who pitched for Brooklyn in the 20s and 30s, had 190. And, of course, everybody's favorite Brooklyn groom from the late 1890s through the turn of the century, Brickyard Kennedy.
Oh, my favorite.
Could I have that name, please? Brickyard?
Do you want to be Steve Brickyard Tannen or just Brickyard Tannen?
Brickyard. Just Brickyard Tannen.
Okay.
This guy.
Man, we're going to have to change all of our imaging.
By the way, I spent 7 minutes researching this guy, and I find myself, and I'm actually like reading his Wikipedia, and then I do another link, and I'm like, what benefit am I getting out of this? Except I get to know about Brickyard Kennedy. So he was pitching in the first World Series. He got into trouble, ended up losing the game, and walked away, never pitched again. Then in his early 40s, he caught tuberculosis and died. It was just like, just such a weird story. The saga of Brickyard Kennedy, coming your way on 95.3 The Score. All right.
So you want to take on the Brickyard legacy, as you can see why
I've already outlived
so many people have been taken, you know, you can see why so many people take the nickname Brickyard, because it's filled with so much success in life. Goodness, man. Pitching the first World Series, catch tuberculosis and die for a guy named Brickyard? Okay, like, that's insanity.
I'm having one of those things. We know the Brickyard is the Indy 500. I wonder how long it's been called that. How long? Oh, okay. So the Brickyard opened in 1909. All right. There's no tie-in. There's no tie-in.
Could
I was
going to
try and connect that dot.
They named the Brickyard 500 after a guy who pitched in a World Series.
Well, maybe he was a racing fan, and so they called him Brickyard, but no. It was early 1900s. It's just, I'm just going to have to accept the fact that no. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. You could also jump on in via the text line, 321-0824. Try us on Twitter at 953thescore for the station, or you can try yours truly at SportsTalk953, or you can try Nick at Rick Nodgers. I forgot who it was on Twitter the other day. It was one of the Duck accounts, not Go Ducks, nothing affiliated with the actual athletic department. And they sent out a tweet, and he said that he's got information that the Oregon State Athletic Department is like making phone calls to get people to buy tickets for the opener against Oklahoma State on a week from Friday. And they're embarrassed at what the turnout might be. And I was like, I don't understand. You know, we were talking about this the other day, how Oregon football lives rent-free in the heads of a lot of people who are Washington fans. I don't understand it, because here's their attitude. Oh, you Johnny come lately, and the only reason you've had success is because of Philip Knight, and we are superior to you, we're dismissive of you, we look down our nose at you, yet all we can think about is you. And so, why would anybody who covers Oregon or roots for Oregon care, and vice versa, what's happening attendance-wise with another program? Oh, man. Every once in a while, I get the age joke, and I blame Alex and I blame you because you started it and you enhance it. And somebody wants to know if I enjoyed watching Brickyard pitch. Whoa. And do I still have his baseball card? That's actually pretty funny, jerks. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in Dave. Dave, good afternoon. How's it going?
It's going well. I wanted to ask you something about what you were talking about at the top of the show. I think you were talking about the Royce White comments with Carmelo.
Yeah.
Is that what you guys started off with?
Yes, we did.
So I took some time to like look up some of Melo's, like, because every time they bring up Carmelo, they always say he's a no-doubt Hall of Famer. Every time they want to talk about him, I just don't understand where all of his accolades are that make him a first-ballot Hall of Famer. And he can't even get a job right now, and his best friend is in desperate need of teammates in L.A., and he doesn't want them.
Well, the thing with Melo is, by the numbers prior to the last, I'd say, three seasons, I mean, he's an all-time scorer. He's won a scoring title. When you average more than 25 points a game, as much of a chucker as he is, that's going to get you attention, and he probably will get in. I'm with you. I don't buy him if it's all-encompassing and incorporating the multiple aspects of what it takes to be an all-time great basketball player. He's never won anything. He is literally, what's the cliche about a great player? He elevates all around him. He doesn't. So I see your point, but man, when you get into that area where all of a sudden, you know, you've got whatever it is, 35,000 points or, you know, whatever it is, it's like you look and you're like, well, every single guy with more than 25,000 points is in the Hall of Fame. I think that's the logic, but I'll tell you what, the fact that he will have not been a full-time player past the age of 33, that might surprise some people and work against him.
Yeah, and you know, you talk about, I'm sure you've heard like some of the comments that Chauncey Billups said about him. Like, you know, if he scored 30 and they lost, he was happy.
Yep.
If he didn't score 30 and they won, he was throwing a fit in the locker room. So just to end it, can you think of any players like him with his kind of stats that were first ballot Hall of Famers played like him?
What do we make of Iverson? Is it because he at least got to one final? And, you know, he was a 6'1 guy who played among the trees. He always got credit for that. I'd actually like to ponder that and maybe throw that out there for some other people. That's a good question, Dave.
Well, hey, thanks for the time, guys. You guys enjoy your afternoon.
All right, take it easy. A player the equal of Anthony, who came in, obviously, you know, he won a natty at the Cuse his 1 year there in 2003.
Yeah.
Was top five pick.
I was going to say, if you take into account his international winnings with the Team USA and his college national championship, because it is the Basketball Hall
Excellent
of Fame,
point.
Not the NBA Hall of Fame. So he's put together, I mean, his NBA resume is strong and good and, you know, has tapered off, you know, as athletes who get older, they decline. But he did a lot when he was a lot younger, not necessarily in the NBA, that I think gives him the credentials to be in the Basketball Hall of Fame.
Here's an interesting one. Somebody just texted Dominique Wilkins. Another guy who just had the spectacular gene. Obviously, the human highlight reel is his nickname. One of the great dunkers of all time. But, man, he was on the Hawks. And they played in one East final, I think. You know, they were always running into either the Dr. J-led Sixers or the Boston Dynasty of the 1980s. Milwaukee was good back then with guys like Junior Bridgman. So, yeah, that's an interesting topic. Let's get to another phone call, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in Quinn. Quinn, good afternoon. How you doing?
I'm doing younger than you are.
Oh, right to
the
first
thing. Oh, yeah, only old people use the word ponder, okay? what prompted my call was listening to you have fun with the names of the new football teams.
Right.
And one of the things that I noticed is that there's just no cohesion in any of the names. So you've got the Guardians, the Defenders, the Panty Raiders, the Excessive Celebrators, whatever they are. If they really want to expand their fan base, they need to pick a theme and then choose names based on the theme.
No, I see what you mean, because a lot of times...
Wait,
okay,
wait a minute.
Go ahead.
So they choose Game of Thrones. Okay, and everybody has to pick a name based on Game of Thrones, and then the Super Bowl or whatever they choose, the whatever they win is like the Iron Throne, right?
Okay.
Or they do the Hobbit. So there's orcs, wizards, whoever. And then the winning trophy is the ruling ring.
Wow, that's deep. Quinn, I'm going to need to know how much thought you put into this, or if it just popped into your head, you need to get into creative writing or filmmaking.
I'd like you to rephrase that, but using the word ponder.
Okay, well, ponder a career in filmmaking or script writing.
I drive a lot, Steve, so I've got nothing to do.
It's classic.
Wait for you to say ponder and think about Game of Thrones or...
The Hobbit.
Oh, no. The best. Harry Potter.
Wow. Okay.
Because then you'd pull a much younger fan base. I don't think the league is going to be around that long. But think about that.
No, I see where you're coming from. Your creativity exudes confidence, and we appreciate the call. Of course, what's the interesting thing about it? I never watched Game of Thrones or seen any of the Harry Potter, so I'm going to have to lean on you guys.
I thought it would be every year the team names change based on the theme, like fantasy football.
Whoa.
Like the fantasy league I'm in, every year we have an overarching theme of what your team name can be, and we change it every year. So, this year it's landscape and geography, and so we've got a bunch of different team names about that. We've done movies and TV shows and music. Every year you're changing a logo. You're trying to get people to buy new merchandise. Oh, it'd be fantastic.
You know, the origin of NFL teams, I don't know why the Bears are the Bears or the Lions are the Lions. I know why the Packers are the Packers because of the meatpacking industry. I know why the Jets are the Jets because Shea Stadium was basically across the street from LaGuardia Airport, and you always heard jets going overhead.
Wait, they're named after an annoyance that fans
yes.
had to...
Yeah. What else would they be? By the way, we may have a winner. The Lions are the Lions because they suck. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in Bill. Bill, good afternoon. How's it going?
Great, Steve. How are you today?
All right, what's up?
Well, going from one annoyance to another, I was listening earlier when you were talking about the Pac-12 considering 9 a.m. Pacific time starts, and I hearken back to the one and one and only one game day I went to when I froze my tuchus off when it started at 7 o'clock, and all I could think of was, tailgating at 5:30 or 6 o'clock is gonna cause major heartache for those Duck fans that that have to be there before the game starts. And then also, you know, that time of year, it's not exactly light at 9 a.m., so they're going to be playing the game.
Whoops. Bill, I think we are going.
Be gone!
We're going to need to check on your Sprint, Bill. Your data may have just run out.
Actually, the temperature is one of the few things I hadn't actually considered becoming an issue of that. Yeah, once you get into like October, November, it tends to get really cold, and the sun doesn't, you know, get as hot. The sun still comes up in the morning. It's still very cold. You're playing under lights, but then you're turning the lights off because the sun is coming up. How early can tailgaters get there? How many people are going to be there because they can't tailgate and they can't get there early? It's a disaster.
All right, folks, it's a Wednesday, and for the last several months, we've had the opportunity to be a part of the fabulous Green Hill Humane Society family. You know how this has worked, so we're coming at you once again with another episode of our Doggy of the Week on 95.3 The Score. All right, it's Wednesday, and of course it's yay day around here, which means we get to welcome in Sarah from Green Hill. How you doing?
Doing pretty well. How are you?
So I'm at Pine Ridge golfing this weekend, and I say, hey, hello, and I look, and there's Sarah zooming past me in a golf cart as I'm practicing my putting.
Yeah.
So how's your golf game? How was your day on the links?
My golf game was a little less to be desired. You know, I was doing pretty well on the shorter courses. I have a really good short game. Lawn game is really hard for me. So those par fives and par fours are a little bit of a struggle.
But fun time out there.
Still had a good time. Yeah, it was gorgeous. Pine Ridge is amazing.
I like that layout. It's very challenging. Yeah. It's aesthetically beautiful. Mm-hmm. And, of course, it's golf, so you get a little bit of aggravation
exactly,
in there.
But
they have a bar. So,
yep,
so that's
exactly.
Good. Tell me about, we have a special guest this week.
Yeah.
Certain dogs, you just look at them. I don't know if it's soulful. They just have this super sweet demeanor.
Yep, they have just that look of love in their eyes. We've got Joyce today. Joyce is a 10-year-old border collie mix. What she's mixed in with exactly, I can't quite place it, but you know, she's got the typical black and white little cattle dog pattern to her. A little bit narrower of a face, so that's where it gets a little confusing.
Oh no, she's really interesting.
She is. She's super mellow. She doesn't really do much. She just kind of likes to hang out and sleep and cuddle and get pets and be around people. That's about it.
Yeah, one of our co-workers just brought in some water. I could hear her slurping in the background.
Yeah, she's quite thirsty, apparently. But she can pretty much go home with just about anybody. We're saying probably maybe 10 or older on the kids, just because if the high attention, you know, the high energy is not really her thing. So just kind of a mellow household she can get along with. Pretty much any dog, but of course we recommend older dogs that kind of have the same mindset as her. And then cats potentially can do just fine with cats as long as there's a slow introduction.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
And as always, for folks who are listening and thinking, yes, adopt, give a doggy its forever home. It sounds like an awesome idea. What do they need to know?
Really simple. Green Hill is open 7 days a week from 11 to 6 p.m. So if there's any animal that you are interested in looking at, come on down. And they have you pretty much fill out a one-page paperwork. And then you meet the animal. And then if it's a dog that you're meeting, obviously, we would recommend that you bring your other dogs if you have any at home. And they get it, go into a little area that they can meet and make sure that they get along. And if everything goes great, you take them home. There's a little bit of a fee that ranges. But that's about it.
And of course, you got the great new facility, and folks can check out online green-hill.org. And Sarah, it is always my pleasure. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Green Hill just rocks. We'll take a break. We'll be back with more sports talk. 95.3 The Score.
1-2 to Pham. Into the dirt. That skips away. Rays are going to win it. Adames crosses the plate, and the Rays pull it out 7-6.
You know, a half a decade ago, there was something called Clemsoning, and it just happened. comebacks. Usually something awful would happen against Florida State, or it didn't matter. It just didn't work out. The 2019 Mariners are marinering. Marinating?
Marinered it?
They marinered it.
M'd it? No, it's too close to the Emerald.
So they're losing by two. They score three in the top of the ninth to go up 6-5 at Tampa. Then in the bottom of the ninth, and by the way, when you see the wild pitch, which they lost on a walk-off wild pitch, Matt McGill bounced one. What do they call it? The 58-footer? It wasn't even close. It was a 50-cent first pitch. I mean, it was just freaking awful. I forgot who it was on Twitter the other day. Tweeted something out about the Mariners and, you know, who's their GM? DePoto?
What did Jerry DePoto?
Yeah, and, you know, they've got six of the top 100 prospects. And I basically was like, and? It's like, well, they could turn into a 1-2-3 punch because they have three pitchers. And I'm like, yeah, because you know what usually works out? Your top three prospects in the minor leagues, you know, usually turn into Verlander, Gerrit Cole, and Strasburg. And the guy was like, well, you don't think DePoto is just going to stamp out? I was like, what has DePoto ever really done? I mean, he was a scout for the Red Sox in the early 2000s. He wasn't the decision maker. He was with the Angels. They did nothing. The Mariners have regressed. And then he started with, well, you know, three of the last four World Series champs have, you know, kind of bottomed out. And yeah, and none of them were the Mariners. It's like, you know, I admire your optimism, but you're also a little deluded because I know it's mean-spirited and we got a lot of Mariner fans around here, but they're one of the worst pro sports franchises we follow. I mean, you know, they're the Knicks without the championship 100 years ago. They're the Clippers. I mean, they're one of the few nevers.
Do you think Knicks fans would look up to the Mariners and be like, wow, I wish we had that kind of stability?
No.
Because, like, I mean, you can even looking at the, you know, the Mariners' future, and sure, you can be even the most ultra-optimistic view of their farm system, and they've got these prospects, and Jerry DePoto's constantly tinkering, and they dropped off that Cano contract, and they don't have to worry about Nelson Cruz getting suspended for 80 games.
They're almost off
every
the hook
year.
For Felix.
Right, Felix is almost gone. Like, you can see optimism.
I do see that. If the question is, would I be more optimistic as a Mariner fan or a Knick fan? Yes, but that doesn't say much about the Mariners.
They cleared a low bar. I mean, they cleared a bar.
So the Yankees, Rays, Bo Sox have all been in a World Series in the last 20 years, since the turn of the century. Toronto, the 90s. The Orioles last won the World Series in 83. All right, the Twins, you got to go back to the 80s. Cleveland's been in it recently. Chi Sox won it recently. KC, the Tigers have been in some ALCS. They haven't been to the World Series, I don't think, since they won. Oh, no. They were in it in 06. They lost, yeah.
Tigers also lost in 2012.
Yeah, you're right, to your Guillons. All right, so the Astros just won. The A's haven't been in forever. The Angels in 02, the Rangers recently. So, yeah, the Mariners are like, well, first of all, they're the only American League team that's never been in the World Series. So they got that going for them, which is nice. So, but in this decade, only Oakland, Minnesota, Toronto and Baltimore have not been in the World Series. So the
Mariners haven't even made the playoffs in like 20 years.
Right, since 01.
Years.
So for the whole, well, they could, it's like, based on what will they? And it's based on nothing except hope. And hope in the end, like Costanza said, will kill you. We'll take a break. The 5 o'clock hour is next. 95.3 The Score.
I'm a fun guy.